Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters, welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm great. I've decided that this episode will be dedicated to the hit CW television show Arrow, because we're both celebrating Green Arrows after game week 11.
That's true. It's a rare podcast where it's all green for me, except the 50-buck cup where I was already in first place.
Okay, yeah. We'll rename the episode the Gray Dot episode. If there's anything better than a green arrow, it's a gray dot, which means you really can't do any better.
So I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that we're recording on a Monday. I don't think I could have recorded yesterday because I'm just, you know, so we had a friend, a friend on Twitter. And now, if I may go so far as to say a friend in real life, Nick Wright was in town from the UK, and he looked us up and said, "Hey, do you guys want to meet for a drink and watch some pure watches?" And of course, we said yes. And I'm not used to the 7 a.m. bar trips anymore, Brandon. I had to get myself geared up again.
Yeah, I did drag myself to the bar for the North London Derby, which started at 7 a.m. promptly here, New York East Coast Standard Time. Can I say that it was worth getting up that early? Okay, look, here's a question. This like speaks to people's watching habits. I knew that if I got up at 7 and sat myself on the couch to watch the North London Derby, it would be harder for me to unplant myself from the couch to get out to the bar for the next round of fixtures. So I decided to just, like, it's like ripping off a Band-Aid. Just get out the door, get out to the pub, and set yourself up there.
Did you walk over? Because it's about a 40-minute walk from your apartment.
I did walk.
Wow. It's bracing. 6 a.m.
It was bracing. You really start to question what it is that your life is all about at that point when, I mean, not even the coffee shops aren't even open that early. So I have no caffeine in my system.
Right.
Walking in the brisk fall air to meet Nick Wright, who was a really cool guy. But I had no idea what kind of guy this was I was on my way to meet.
That's true. I mean, it's a total crapshoot. Anytime like we meet up with listeners, we're always excited to do it. And there's that moment like 2 minutes before we're like, oh, man, like, is this going to be terrible? Like, wow, is this going to be any fun? Now, and it's always been great.
Yeah. I went to Scotland actually to meet, if you're listening, Colin and Graham, who met up with me in Edinburgh. And that was kind of different because I was meeting them on their turf. So it was fun to have Nick from the UK here meeting us in Brooklyn. I felt a little safer.
And, you know, the upshot was that the matches we watched were fantastic. Okay, so the North London Derby, From a fantasy perspective, a little bit of a dud. I mean, no one really has Harry Kane right now. The only Arsenal goal was an own goal. I had dropped Walcott, and so the only coverage I had was Nacho Monreal. So I felt pretty good with the results, all things considered. I mean, you know, 5 points from Ozil, 2 from Sanchez, 2 from Walcott, you know, 2 from Cech. It's about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, there was one potentially great fantasy moment for me because I was still holding on to Walcott and Ozil in my midfield. And we'll all remember Walcott breaking down the right flank of the field and just let a shot rip and it goes off of the post. Bounces directly into the path of Mesut Ozil. And I'm thinking, perfect. Assist. Goal for both of my midfielders. And Ozil, I mean, it was, he had to basically pluck a half volley out of the air, running full steam ahead, and it was going to be very difficult to convert. But had it happened, sure, it would have been beautiful. Instead, I end up with just an Ozil assist. And this is perhaps the only game in history where Ozil has got attacking points, but no BPS.
Yeah, the whole Arsenal attack was a little, I mean, I suppose you have to give some credit to the Spurs defense, but the attack I thought was a little muted in general. It was a kind of an interesting match. I was listening to the Guardians Football Weekly podcast, and they were kind of calling it a bit of a dud, but I was pretty entertained by the match. I thought it was kind of an interesting back and forth. You know, I mean, it was one of those games where once Harry Kane scored, you kind of knew no one else was going to score.
Yeah.
You know, there were just very few scoring chances after that goal went in.
For me, the big takeaway of the game was that Alexis Sanchez did not look anywhere close to his best. And I think he'll have at least one of those games every month where he just can't connect a pass and he looks totally out of sync with his teammates.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be terribly concerned if I was an Alexis Sanchez owner. We're going to talk a lot about midfielders later on in the podcast, so maybe we'll get to this later.
It's frustrating, though, when you're 11, whatever he is right now, 11.4 or something, million midfielder, doesn't do anything when you know that every Liverpool midfielder is putting up, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 points, you know, seemingly every game week. And, you know, and then you've got KDB putting in points and obviously Eden Hazard as well. You know, it's a very tricky time, I think, for fantasy managers. But, you know, as you said, we'll get to that in a little bit.
I think the memory that I'll hold most dear in our encounter with deputy cheater Nick Wright was Nick was trying to talk to us about, like, you know, what kind of people we are, how do we get into the podcast, all these cool questions. And I kept interrupting him right when Kapu was about to do something. I just sort of like stick my hand in Nick's face and get out of my stool. And
you put your fingers in his mouth at one point, which I thought was a bit too far.
That was definitely for all those people where it was kind of Kapu's last stand in their teams. There were some teasing looks for Kapu there, and it just didn't come to be.
The last day, it was when a ball literally, you know, it kind of beats Karius, or he stopped it just enough that it basically rolled at like half a kilometer per hour.
Yeah.
Towards the, I like I said kilometer per hour.
Well, you're more British than you ever thought you were.
I'm starting to change. I do say football more than I say soccer.
You have changed. Speaking of change, Josh, I see next in the running order, we have to talk about an important lesson that you learned this weekend.
Okay. This is, you could almost build a whole section around this, Brandon, but it's so important that I'm going to put it at the top of the podcast. I'm doing a full, I am as serious as a heart attack now, Brandon. Are you ready for this?
Okay.
It actually sounds like I'm about to make a joke, but I am serious.
Okay. Yeah. Go. Okay. The floor is yours, Josh.
So I have two players in my team that I haven't been able to get rid of for one reason or another, mostly because of injuries or for players who performed worse. I had kind of a bad run from, I don't know, game week 7 to 10 or so. And so somehow I ended up having Raheem Sterling and Antonio on my team going into these fixtures. And these are players that most people have really cut bait with, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago as their kind of lack of scoring continued. And and I thought, you know what, I'm gonna hold Sterling for the Middlesbrough fixture, and I'm not gonna bring in Eden Hazard, even though I had enough money in the bank that I could move Sterling to Hazard for a 0 point hit, right? Just a straight transfer. And I said, you know what, he's gonna come good because of this good fixture. And you know, lo and behold, Saturday comes around and Hazard racks up 19 points. And Sterling doesn't even make the bench, just does not play at all. And It was about as low as I can remember feeling as an FBL manager.
You've had some soaring highs, Josh, but you have had some low lows. So this is saying something.
The last I'm on a 50 month cooler right now, or a 50 game week cooler. I've been joking a couple. I've said to a couple of different people that like the last like good game week I had was game week 38 of the 2014-2015 season. Yeah. and that's not entirely true. And you know, even last year I turned around by the end, but you know, I just feel like I've been made, I don't know, you know, this happens in poker a lot, you know, where the people just go on a cooler and they just have, you know, they run bad for a little while. And, you know, I mean, let's not pretend there's not a lot of luck involved in the fantasy game. I know that for certain brilliant managers, maybe this never happens, you know.
What is the lesson that you learned?
Sorry. It's all, I'm building.
Friend. Because, I'm, okay. All right. Because right now I'm hearing a lot of hindsight is 20/20.
Okay. The lesson is, don't count on a good fixture to break a mediocre player out of a slump. Uh-huh. Right? Okay. Right. Okay. So I don't know if I quite frame. I probably should have written this out.
I'm with you. I think that makes perfect sense. So you have a player. Ibrahimovic is another good example of this, where he actually did turn okay in the Swansea match. But the overwhelming advice would be, it doesn't matter how enticing that Swansea match looks. This guy is in terrible form. Drop him.
Right. Although in his case, you could argue that you held with him long enough to get those returns, because he is a great player with a 10-year record of scoring tons of goals. Right. He scores in the league. He scores in the Champions League. He scores everywhere. You know he's going to score. And this is why when Sergio Aguero has a run where he looks poor or doesn't really perform, you don't drop him before that West Brom game, because he has this track record of being a great scorer. But when you've got a player like Raheem Sterling or Antonio, who are not great scorers, I mean, you know, Raheem Sterling is sort of famous for having like what seems like a brick wall around the goal sometimes. You know, I mean, he's super fast. He has great instincts. He often gets in a fantastic position, but he can't finish.
Right.
And so, you know, he started the first half of the season super hot. It was like, oh, he finally figured it out. He finally finished. But, you know,
reborn, people said.
What's that?
Reborn.
Like, exactly. But after 3 or 4 weeks, it wasn't going to turn around for him. And you just don't know that he's not a spectacular goal scorer, or even a player like Ozil, who is spectacular at creating chances for other players. Right. He's sort of, I mean, Theo Walcott falls in this category too.
Yeah.
You know, these are players, they tend to be players who play out in the wing, and they tend to be form players. You know, they go on these runs where they're spectacular and they sort of disappear for a while.
You appreciate, Josh, a player like Jesus Navas, who is one of the most consistent wingers in the league.
That's true. He just
for all the wrong reasons, he is consistent.
Exactly. He never tempts. So I think that I have been too nice to the players on my team the last few weeks, and I've been rooting for them and I've been pulling for them, and I need to be more ruthless with my transfers.
Right. You need to be less a kindergarten teacher and more a high school vice principal.
Exactly. I've gotten soft. And so that, I think that was the lesson. I forgot it. I forgot that if you're talking about the best players in the league, I mean, okay. So I guess the counterexample to this would be Eden Hazard last year, who I stuck with for 10 or 11 weeks because he's such a spectacular player. It was, you know, he'd scored 14 goals and 10 assists two seasons in a row. I really felt strongly that, you know, he was gonna be able to keep it going. And it just didn't happen, you know. So sometimes it, and I think maybe that got me like a little jumpy. I don't know, like it like messed up my instincts a little bit or something. But so Sterling's out, and I think that this lesson is really important and one I'm going to try to keep to the rest of the season.
All right, so you brought up the magic word Hazard, and I wanted to touch real briefly on two key things that are in the front of every manager's mind right now. A, knee jerking. Because we're talking about Chelsea and Liverpool here. What is our philosophy about knee-jerking? And also the tendency to knee-jerk or withhold and wait too long when we're heading into what is now an international break. So okay. I don't know that you bringing in Hazard over the weekend qualifies as a knee-jerk, because you'd basically already in your mind brought him into your team. You just didn't pull the trigger. But
yeah, I brought him in on Saturday because the FPL price changes, whatever FPL Statistico or you know the one that everybody uses. They told me that Hazard was due for a rise and Sterling was due for a fall, and I just thought, screw it. I had two transfers to make this week anyway, so I just made that transfer right away. It was a very easy transfer to make.
So the idea of knee-jerking is kind of killing me this season, because typically I try to think about my team value and I do make transfers earlier in the week. Rarely does it burn me. But for whatever reason, this season I've been a little more lackadaisical I've been waiting longer and my team value has definitely suffered for it. We talked about this last week where I was planning on bringing in Joe Allen along with Troy Deeney, and because I waited a couple days too long, I could no longer afford both of those guys, and I ended up with my new favorite midfielder, Martin Deroon.
You got to feel pretty good about having Deroon.
I mean, I feel good in so far as that his value will probably go up from 4.3 million to 4.4, so yeah, that's all right. And, I mean, if he plays the full 90 and scores a beautiful headed goal against Manchester City, I think that it endears himself to his manager, so he'll surely see a lot more starts for that team. But I have to be a little fearful for the managers out there that have already knee-jerked Liverpool and Chelsea midfielders into their squad, just because, as it always happens with international breaks, there's a lot that can happen. There are injuries that can happen. There is form that can be broken. And I feel like we see it time and time again with the match weeks that happen after an international break. They can be a little more sluggish and low scoring. So, yeah. You know, I don't know that this is true with just the scorching form that Liverpool and Chelsea are in right now. But
yeah.
are you bringing in Firmino and Coutinho expecting them to get, you know, 15 points a pop week in, week out? Are we going to see a big dip when we get back from this break?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I typically do side with you, and I especially in an international break, I like to wait as long as possible. But, I mean, yeah, with Coutinho and Firmino, there's a good chance that one or both of them could end up being on the bench for the next game week. Although, given that the next fixture, I believe it's Southampton away, so it's not exactly an easy fixture. It's probably one they have to play, you know, a pretty good squad for. I just think that anyone who watches the Liverpool squad right now, anybody who looks at the stats for these players, I think that it just seems like a pretty safe bet to me. I mean, it's, you know, and Hazard is the same way. I mean, whatever happened last season, it appears to be over, you know, and right. I mean, that whole attack right now, just it seems like it's flowing through him. And given how much his price is going to rise, I mean, so I guess it depends on how quick you make the move. I mean, he's already risen 0.1. I think he's about to rise again. So, I mean, if you've already missed two price jumps, then what's another 10th? You might as well just wait until the end of next week, you know?
Right. And for those listeners that aren't privy, a player can only rise by 0.3 million within one transfer window.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, my case, I wanted to get ahead of that 0.3. I had thought about, okay, so the Hazard versus Sterling thing, I mean, obviously in hindsight, you feel terrible. It effectively cost me 17 points. In my head, it seemed reasonable. I mean, Everton has a pretty good defense. I mean, I didn't know that Jake Yalka apparently died like 8 days ago. And he's
been replaced by just a fat version of himself. I was telling you this when I saw you yesterday at Sunday. Watching the end of that Everton Chelsea game, there was the camera just zoomed in on Jagielka's torso walking off the field, and you could see it wasn't just like his shirt was hitting the wrong way on his stomach. The dude was fat. The dude was fat.
He had a tire around his
waist. It was unmistakable.
Yeah. Well, okay, so, but back to Hazard for a second. So
meanwhile, he gets a call up for the England squad, so what do I know?
Yeah, so, I mean, for them to do so well against a pretty good defense was part of the reason why I wanted to make the move. But also, he was 9.9 on Saturday, which is actually 0.1 below his starting price for the season. By the time the fixtures get really good for Chelsea, which is probably game week 15, they have a good fixture at Middlesbrough away in game week 12, and then they play two pretty tough games. They play Spurs and they play City back to back. followed by West Brom, Sunderland, Crystal Palace, all fixtures you want a Chelsea player for. But if I waited until game week 15, I mean, there's a good chance this price is 10.6 or 10.7.
Yeah.
And so I decided just to move now and hope that he could pick up some points, you know, in those tough fixtures. It's kind of a long – to me, it was like a long-term investment to bring him in right away.
Yeah, I think the question of knee-jerk is also vexing me because there are three must-have in-form midfielders right now, Firmino, Coutinho, and Hazard. Now, you have all three of them, and I have none of them. And I can't really knee-jerk because I don't know which of those three to get in at the moment. So I just need time to think about it, and it's not going to be a quick decision for me. Therefore, I'm not knee-jerking. So anyway, this little philosophy will inform all the talk that we have going forward about midfielders.
And if you want me to explain my FPL lesson over Twitter or something, please let me know, because I'm not sure how clear I was. So hopefully it did make sense, though. Brandon, before we get into the Hail Cheaters Super League Top 10, I wanted to mention that we have a special topic for next week's episode. International break, I thought we could mix it up a little bit. We'll still do a Game Week 12 preview, but I thought the other topic for the week could be, if you could change anything about the FPL, whether it's the site, whether it's the way the game is run, whatever, what would it be? And I thought we'd talk through the best answers on the podcast.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Yeah, so people can tell us what they want to change, one thing, right. And be pithy about it. Hit us up on Twitter at Hail Cheaters. Our Facebook page, which is blossoming, thanks to everyone who's liking us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/alwayscheating. Or you can just send us an email through our website, alwayscheating.com, or hailcheaters@gmail.com.
You got it. All right. So moving on. So, Brandon, I picked up 61 points this game week. I think you picked up 58. Is that right?
That is correct. Yeah. Call me the green arrow. You're the gray dot, and I'm the green arrow.
But that was not enough for us to crack the top 10 of the Hail Cheaters Super League. Shall we run through the top 10 here, Brandon?
Yeah. So currently I reside in 543rd place. So that is no match to our first place manager.
But that's out of like 1400 managers. So you can't feel too bad about that.
Yes, it's true. I'm not in last place. I'm battling with the rest of you listeners. All right, we have a new first-place manager. It's Arshan Badawala, his squad A-team. He scored 67 points on the game week, total score of 678, which means he's ranked overall in the world 872. So that's a manager in the top 1,000. Very impressive, Arshan. Second place, David Fellheim, the Cuddly Koalas, big 74 points on the game week. Third place, BTSTU, that's Mitch Maynard, who was first place last week. So that's a dip in form for Mitch Maynard, Facebook Photoshop extraordinaire. Fourth place, Heaton Me for Mignolet, William Sutton's squad. He scored 62 points this game week. In fifth, it's Billich's Beauties, that's Matt Floyd's squad, 68 points this week. Sixth place, Ladzantore, Nick Forrester's team. In seventh, the Onion Baggers, Jamie Robinson. And we have eighth place, Sound of the Police. I can never sort of cut that baby in half between police and Pulis. Mm-hmm. The sound of the Pulis.
You did a great job.
Thanks a lot, Josh. Ninth place, Lamella's Gloves. That's James Slauson's squad. And in tenth, it's Clichy's Clean Sheets, Fabio Borges. There was no clean sheet for Clichy this week, but Fabio, you're doing well there in 10th place. Congratulations to everyone in the Hail Cheaters Super League. You can still join. Just go to alwayscheating.com and click the league tab. There is the auto join button right there.
That's right. And we have a trophy this year. We talked about this many, many weeks ago, but if you forgot, we have a trophy. I don't know what it's going to be yet.
We have a promise of a trophy. We don't actually have the physical trophy yet. So if you have suggestions as to what sort of livestock you want mounted on top of this trophy.
If your uncle's friend's former roommate owns a trophy shop or something like that, let us know.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure maybe as we get closer to the end of the season, we should pick a trophy shop that is in the country of wherever our first place manager is going to be. It'll save us on shipping, I think.
That's true. Brandon, we have two meltdowns this week, our meltdown of the week. First comes from Tom Knight.
Okay, Tom Knight says, Is there an unwritten rule that when using all-out attack, one of your strikers' mids won't play, e.g. Sterling, for me, this game week?
I think Tom knows that there is an unwritten rule that says that. We all know that all-out attack never works for anybody.
Never has, never will. I can't think of a single situation where it did.
I think we put out like a call to arms, like for anybody to tell us a story of an all-out attack working. And it was one horror story after another.
Yeah, the same thing happened to me last season. I haven't played my all-out attack yet, but last season I did, and Ozil, I don't even know if he was on the bench. I think he was just out injured.
I think he had the flu or something.
Yeah, so nope, never going to happen.
AMHA9 United says, I transferred Benteke out for Lukaku last game week because of Lukaku's form. He blanks this game week and Benteke scores. Hashtag Blankaku.
Now, there's not really much you can add to that. I mean, it does go to the theory that you should trust form over fixture. It's kind of like the lesson you sort of learned this weekend, right, Josh?
I think that is a perfectly acceptable move. I don't know if I would have transferred in Lukaku before an away match to Chelsea, given how well their defenses looked. But certainly as a long-term move, I think you're going to be happier with Lukaku. I mean, he's home to Swansea this game week, so, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
All right, Brandon, enough ranting, enough meltdowns. Let's take a quick break, and then let's get right into our midfield madness section of this week's podcast.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, we're back, and we're entering midfield madness. If one thing became violently clear this weekend, violently clear, that was a strange word for me to grasp for, it was that we need Liverpool and Chelsea midfielders more than we need any players in our squads. I mean, maybe you could make the argument you need Chelsea defense as well.
You know, Brett, I was in a meeting a few days ago when I used the expression, is violently just not a word that people really use as an adjective? I don't know. I said something, someone like had an idea, and I said, well, I'm not violently opposed to it. And everyone recoiled in the meeting. I don't know. Violently is not a word that really lends itself to
unless you're Bjork. And you have a hit song, Violently Happy. That's where I picked it up from. I learned it from you, Bjork.
All right. Anyway, back to the podcast.
So we're going to run through a lot of questions that we got online were about top-tier midfielders, and we're just going to run through all your questions and sort out our general feelings about where we are right now with investing in all of these midfield players. First one comes from Trevor Ingerson. Trevor, one of our former co-hosts, if you'll remember. If you could get three players from either Chelsea or Liverpool right now, price doesn't matter, you can afford anyone in this scenario, who would you pick?
We talked about this at the top of the podcast, and I think if I could pick any three players from the entire squad, forward, midfield, defense, I would actually pick the three players that I have right now, which are Coutinho, Firmino, and Hazard. And I hesitated for a second because I could see wanting Costa more than Hazard. What do you think?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I feel like Costa could conceivably be more consistent long-term over the season, assuming the team form continues, because Costa is the tip of the spear and the Hazard, even at his best, can be a little mercurial. So, yeah, I could – maybe I'll be devil's advocate here, and I will pick three other players. I would go I mean, from Chelsea, I think the other ones that are on the bubble there right now would be you'd pick between Azpilicueta and Alonso. Let's go with Alonso based on current form. Alonso, Pedro, and Costa. So Pedro is the value for Chelsea midfield. So say you've got a lot of things going on in your midfield right now, or you're overinvested in your front line and you can't afford Hazard. Right now, it looks like Pedro is a... He's probably a little bit better than Lallana in terms of attacking threat for Chelsea.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with that. And my concern with Pedro, too, is I'm still not sure that he's a long-term starter on that squad.
Right.
I mean, I know that they're in good form right now, and he's probably got a spot until he loses a little bit of form. But I still think long-term that he's in Willian's spot. And I think that Willian will – I mean, Willian is a – I mean – based on the evidence of last season, you know, he is a spectacular player. I mean, it may be that he doesn't fit into the 3-5-2 as well. I'm not sure. I don't know why he wouldn't, though. I mean, given his strengths.
That is my question about the 3-5-2. And I feel like Willian has kind of been off on the sidelines once they changed to that system. And Pedro looks like he looks way better than he did at the start of the season. I was actually making the case for Willian, I think a couple weeks ago, that I thought Willian would jump back into Pedro's position just because he's a better footballer. But the way I see Pedro fitting in there, it seems pretty seamless the last couple of weeks. And I actually think that Willian is going to have to fight for that spot.
I think that the price point is kind of tricky for Pedro, though. First of all, I don't know that I trust him to be in good form coming out of the international break. Obviously Pedro was a great player for Barcelona, but you know what we saw last year was really off-putting. And he's what, 31? Maybe he's 32 now. I don't know that he's going to be getting an extended run out. He's not going to play 90 in a lot of fixtures, I wouldn't think. I mean, they're going to manage his minutes a little bit. So, and I also find his price point to be a little tricky. Mm-hmm. You know, I sort of feel like what you want right now are three kind of expensive midfielders and maybe the one sub 5.5, sub 6.0, a Gundogan and Allen. We're going to talk about those guys in a minute. At seven, I feel like it kind of pinches your budget in other areas. You know, I mean, it seems like the template that we're starting to see, I think, right now, the new template, I know that's like it changes every 3 weeks or whatever, but you know, it's two expensive forwards, a cheap Charlie Austin type third forward, three expensive midfielders, a cost-effective fourth midfielder, someone you can like dump at the end of the bench, like a Darren Fletcher, and then maybe like two strong defenders.
Right. I still do see Pedro as coverage. So I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I think he is legitimate Chelsea coverage if you can't get Hazard or Costa.
But is coverage even a real thing? I feel like I'm not sure that I even trust coverage as a concept.
It is a total real thing because if you look at the last four game weeks, Leicester United, Southampton, Everton, Pedro has two goals and four assists. He's been involved in 6 of Chelsea's however many goals, and you're just, that is a real thing. You're covering those points that the Hazard and Costa owners have if you can't get in on those points.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I mean, I think we're gonna have to agree to disagree on Pedro here a little bit.
Yes, that's fine. I may never speak to you
again on this. Uppercut Pan says, triple up on Liverpool midfielders. That's the way to go, right?
I can't say no. Dare I say, though, it's too much.
It seems like a bit too much.
I mean, I'm not suggesting that you get two Liverpool midfielders and go nuts and buy a Liverpool defender.
I think we talked about this a little bit in the last week's podcast. I mean, it puts all your eggs in one basket. I mean, even given how spectacular they look, you know, they're still capable of losing 2-0 on the road to Burnley, you know, and you really,
yeah,
if you're putting money in the bank, you have a 401k or something, you know, you got to diversify your portfolio a little bit.
Exactly. Say Liverpool has one bad game week, your midfield is decimated if you're tripled up.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeremiah Johnson asks, tripling up on Liverpool mids looks good, but not sustainable, or is it? They can't score 4+ goals every week, can they?
No, I mean, like you were talking about a minute, I don't think so. I mean, there are times when you watch them win 6-0, and we saw this a little bit last season too, especially near the end of the year, where I mean, they look like they can't be stopped. I mean, it's such a, you know, especially with Coutinho and Firmino, and God, Firmino is really a spectacular player. I mean, and you know, a lot's been written about him the last couple of weeks, just in traditional news outlets, about just how complete he is on that in that Klopp squad. I mean, he's just, you know, he's tracking back, he's winning the ball, he's starting the attack, and then he's running forward and, you know, delivering the final ball. I mean, it's really he looks fantastic. I'm actually surprised he isn't getting more bonus points given all the hard work that he's doing.
We are at the tipping point, I think. It's kind of a lazy comparison to compare this Liverpool squad to the Sterling Suarez Sturridge squad, but I think we're very close to that actually becoming a thing and us actually having to triple up on Liverpool. The problem is they're with Sterling Sanchez and Sturridge, is there was a mix of midfield and strikers, and here it's all midfielders, and it makes it a little tricky to work around in your in your FPL team.
I think what makes having at least two Liverpool midfielders so compelling is that until their prices get out of control, you can have Coutinho and Firmino for 17 million or thereabouts, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the exact – I don't have like their exact prices on hand right now, but they're about 8.5 million each, maybe a little bit higher now. So for that price, you're getting, you know – One top midfielder like an Alexis or an Hazard, and one like very low midfielder, you know, someone who's kind of inconsistent perhaps, and you're getting a lot of value. You can afford to have these players, mm-hmm. you know, you can afford to have two of them and still have Eden Hazard and still have one pretty decent fourth midfielder. You know, if we're not even talking about someone like KDB, you know, like if you have KDB and you have Hazard and you have Ibrahimovic and you have Alexis. There's no money to go around, you know, but because these guys are so cheap right now, it's even more sort of compelling to bring in to even double up on Coutinho and Firmino because it's just not setting you back that much money.
All right. Jeff Petter asks, lots of focus, rightly so, on Liverpool, as evidenced by the last 45 minutes of this podcast. Liverpool and Chelsea assets, but who is potentially going under the radar in the meantime? So Liverpool, great. Chelsea, great. But who are we sleeping on right now?
It's a very good question. KDB, I guess, is the one that sticks out to me a little bit.
Kind of. Yeah, kind of. I mean, I think
his price just makes it kind of hard to bring him in right now.
It does. His price and his very sort of tepid form. I mean, KDB's form and Manchester City's team form right now. It's just not compelling at that price point. I think we started sleeping on some of the midfielders that were bubbling up like in game week one. Your Robert Snodgrasses. God, I was like half tempted to say Ramirez there for a second, but that's completely silly.
Yeah, Nathan Redmond.
But frankly, there just isn't anyone that we're sleeping on right now. I think that a lot of teams are underperforming. I mean, look at that Everton midfield. Are you going to choose between Bolasie and Ross Barkley? I don't see those guys as compelling options when you're...
It feels like everything is moving so fast this year. You know, I mean, a guy like Gundogan has a good performance and he rises. So he rose 0.3 in a week last week, and then he rose another 0.1 on Saturday. I mean, like he went from undervalued midfield option to slightly expensive player for a defensive midfield. I mean, he's up to 5.8 now, you know, like, I mean, he's still good value at 5.8, but he's starting to get a little too pricey, in my opinion, you know, given his role. I mean, I know he looked good and, you know, on Saturday, but I don't know. I mean, how do you feel about Gundogan? I guess we're jumping the gun here a little bit, but are you thinking about bringing him in? Would you want to bring him in?
If I were on a wild card right now, I'd absolutely want to bring Gundogan in because I think a lot of managers will be disappointed that he didn't get any attacking points on Saturday, but, He was in the penalty box as advertised. He was getting looks at goal. Everyone was concerned. Well, this guy's all, you know, the most goals he's ever scored in a season is 5. So how can you think he's actually going to be on maybe 10 goals for the rest of the season? But I do think an attacking midfielder for one of the best teams in the league under 6 million who looks to be a nailed-on starter. That to me is a no-brainer. So I think Gundogan is a very strong option still.
I'm definitely mispronouncing his name, by the way, too. It's Gundogan.
Yeah, Gundogan.
The G is pronounced like a W. Got it. Okay. I mean, their next two fixtures are away to Crystal Palace and away to Burnley. Probably lots of goals in both those games. So I don't disagree with you. I have to say I was kind of nervous watching that match. I did watch that match in protest because I was so mad about Sterling not playing. God, Sterling's already dropped 0.2 this week. He's down to 8.1 now. Wow, what a fall for Sterling.
Right.
He's almost going to turn into good value again. He's, you know, he's going to get down to like 7.8, and suddenly he's going to be a great option. You know, Theo Walcott is another player I'm sort of thinking about. It's not that he's off the radar. I mean, stuff doesn't move that quickly. But, I mean, you know, his price is dropping a little bit. Arsenal you know, kind of a tough run. You know, he hasn't looked good in the last couple of game weeks, but, you know, they're home to Bournemouth in 2 weeks. And, you know, that to me is a great fixture for Walcott. And, you know, I'm trying to kind of find a way to fit him into my team for that game week 13 fixture.
It is a good 3 week fixture run there for them, 13, 14, and 15 with Bournemouth, West Ham, and Stoke. And those are two home games within there. So, yeah. I don't know if I have the patience to hold on to Walcott at the moment because I'm without any Liverpool or Chelsea midfield, and because of Walcott's price range, he's like public enemy number one in terms of freeing up cash for Chelsea or Liverpool. So
yeah,
though of course I do have Lallana in my midfield, and I have no idea how Lallana managed to get all three bonus points
after that game. Yeah, that was shocking.
It was totally shocking. This is the point at which Kapu stops being a fun little hobby in my FPL team, and it becomes very problematic. And I can't change him into anything at the moment. So
you can't change Kapu, Brandon. He is who he Kapu is. Don't try to change him, baby. Luke Thunberg says, I have a dilemma and I want Hazard, Sanchez, Aguero, Costa, and Lukaku all on my team, and I need more money. I think it's a problem that we're all going through right now. And okay, I mean, this is just this is a really fun season so far, I have to say, even though I may be not doing as well as I want at the start of the season. It's really fun because it is impossible to have all of the great players this year. And you have to gamble. You have to pick up 3 out of 5 of the top performers, and you have to kind of, you know, I mean, I have an Diego Costa all season. That guy's got like 9 goals now and
yeah,
15 bonus points. And yeah, I still don't have a plan to bring him in because I don't even know how I do it. You know, like there's just, who am I going to drop in that squad, and how would I move things around? And I love it. I think it's a great, if you can step back from it for a minute and like, or, you know, remove yourself from the stress of it, because it is kind of stressful to have to pick these players. I mean, I feel like last season I wasn't agonizing over every move the way I am this season. I'm really trying to get it right, you know, every single game week.
It is so very stressful. Yeah. And I'm thinking, when I look at Luke's question, I'm thinking of what my response is going to be to how one change I would make to the FPL game if I could.
Yeah.
More money.
James Drury says, I have KDB, Firmino, Alexis, Aguero, and Lukaku. I got to give a shout out to James Drury, by the way, because he's really – James Drury is making our Showstoppers League a lot more fun. He is a mover and a shaker in the Showstoppers League.
He is a mover and a shaker. Well done, James. Yeah.
How do I get Hazard in? The obvious move would be KDB or Sanchez to him, but they both have great fixtures. I guess – to me, KDB would be the player that I would move for Alexis, just because at 10.7, I still don't know that he's worth 10.7.
No, I mean, he definitely isn't.
Yeah, I mean, not when you can move him into Coutinho, you know, for $2 million cheaper.
Okay, I'm going to say something super controversial here, but hashtag Snod is God. Robert Snodgrass is effectively playing the same game that KDB is right now for half the price. So KDB to Hazard, and if you miss that KDB style of play, Robert Snodgrass is your man.
Yeah, I mean, you do KDB to Hazard, and if you do it, you know, fairly quickly, that's 0.7 more in your bank that you can, you know, that you can just use for whatever, right? I mean, maybe Lukaku gets injured, and you can turn Lukaku into Costa or something like that down the road. So Jeremiah Johnson says, it's kind of funny, actually, the next question, it's like the complete opposite of our conclusion. Jeremiah Johnson says, is KDB sufficient City coverage if one wants to drop Aguero to free up funds?
It's a harder one to answer, though, because, I mean, taking Aguero out of your team does definitely change up your team value insofar as maybe KDB isn't that big of a burden for you to carry in your midfield.
But isn't the easy answer here just to think of KDB as the player to drop instead of Aguero?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can go flashback in time to when we were arguing about Pedro versus the rest of the FPL midfield. If you had to choose between KDB and Aguero, that's the easiest decision you have to make. Just keep Aguero. Don't worry about KDB.
I totally agree. I mean, that West Brom game showed us something we need to know, right? I mean, you just Aguero is undroppable because he's capable of scoring between 15 and 20 points in any game week, and form doesn't really affect him.
I've got to say, though, I am not liking this new sort of emo side of Aguero we're seeing this season.
Yes.
Where he was so miffed during that Middlesbrough game that he missed that open opportunity that basically he just starts lashing out at every Middlesbrough player he can get his hands on.
Yeah, he's in his own head a little bit. Although that first goal he scored was great.
It was. It really was.
And he's probably, how many yellows is he on right now? Is he on four now? He might be on a caution.
I don't know that he's played enough games yet to get up to four yellows.
He's at least three. Brandon, let's move on to section 1A, clause B, paragraph 4. Mid-price midfielders, you got all of these expensive players. Who do you want to bring in? I've got three different questions that I'll tie into this. Jonathan Neal says, gun-to-gun in at 5.7 for a cheap midfield option to free up funds. Jamie Dean says, is the snod a returning god?
Praise snod.
Praise the snod. And Kings of Lion says, Leon, I should say, says, why is Snodgrass not getting the transfers that Gundogan, Allen, and Kapuwe received? Okay, to take these third question first, the reason that Snodgrass is a bit of a tricky option for people is because Hull City are terrible, and they haven't been scoring a lot of goals, and they've been losing every match they play, and Snodgrass has been injured as well, right? And so,
kind of go hand in hand, don't they?
Yeah. I mean,
Snodgrass comes in off the bench against Southampton, and guess what happens? Goal on an assist, and they beat Southampton.
The second I saw him come on, I have Virgil van Dijk, and the second I saw him come on, I thought, oh god, this is not going to be good for Southampton. I just felt it, you know. I don't know. Yeah. So I love Snodgrass.
If you buy into that Snodgrass narrative that he is a returning god, just get a load of this, right? Sunderland, West Brom, Middlesbrough, Crystal Palace. They have Spurs in game week 16, but back at it again with West Ham in game week 17. That's if Hull is going to get past the fact that they're terrible, it's a decent run to have Snodgrass, to give Snodgrass a run out.
I think so. You know, we talked about Gundogan already. I mean, Gundogan, I think we both agree that Gundogan is a fantastic option. I worry that by the time I can bring, I don't really have a plan to bring him in right now. And by the time I do, I think his price is going to get a little unpalatable for me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't love Gundogan at 6.4 million or something like that. You know, I like him at 5.5.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a buy now situation or forever hold your peace.
Yeah, Joe Allen is the one. So I have two transfers this week. I already, as I mentioned, I took out Sterling and brought in Hazard. I wanted to get ahead of those price hits, and now I'm either going to make a move for my defense, or I'm going to turn Antonio into Joe Allen, because I love those Stoke fixtures, and it's really about whether I think that Antonio can do anything away to Spurs in game week 12, and if so, I'd much rather spend the money on my defense this game week. So yeah, it's a tricky one.
I'm looking at the season ticker here in game week 14. I am really excited about this Manchester-Chelsea matchup.
Man City, yeah, I know. That's a very interesting match, right?
It is a pure, that is a, just to throw a little pure watch, hashtag pure watch into this podcast. I'm just sitting here thinking about mid-price mids, and I'm like, you know what? I don't really care about mid-price mids. What I really care about is Man City against Chelsea game week 14.
I think that if you were looking at the, just in terms of where they play in the attack, I think that Snodgrass is probably the best option with Allen and Gundogan somewhere behind him.
Yeah.
If the quality of the team, and I know that you love having coverage, Brandon, if coverage is an important thing, then maybe Gundogan is the player for you.
I agree. Yeah, I would take Gundogan over KDB. That's an easy question for me to answer. I think these three mid-price mids are actually they sort of create the FPL timeline of the season. Like if you were tinkering with your midfield earlier in the season, you probably have Snodgrass. If you were tinkering four or five weeks ago, that's the Joe Allen section of the season. Now we're entering the Gundogan epoch.
And I'm
not sure where we go for here after the Gundogan.
I can't believe
epoch.
We're only 11 weeks into the season. I feel like we're like 30, maybe because we've done 37 podcasts since the season started or something. I'm not sure why it feels like we're so far into the season already. Okay, one other option, Brandon. Richard Orford says, hey guys, whispering it quietly, but West Brom players, Brunt out of position, Chadley, Phillips, Rondon, team and forthcoming fixtures on the up.
I can't argue with that. And West Brom has really been putting up some fight the last few weeks. I mean, they've shown some real attacking grit. I mean, Matty Phillips Miraculously, I don't know. First of all, it's controversial that Matty Phillips picked up the number 10 shirt for that team. Like, nobody else at West Brom wanted number 10. Phillips is just going to stroll right in there and grab it.
Chadley shouldn't have been able to take that from him when he joined the squad.
But, Burnley, Hull, Watford, that's as good as it gets. My issue is Nacer Chadley would be the one that I would want to bring in. And a knee injury, that's just not one that you slide seamlessly back into form from, I think. I mean, I frankly don't know how serious the knee injury is, but I'm a little concerned about that.
Yeah, Chadley is the one that I'm sort of intrigued by, too. I mean, his price is pretty appealing. He's only $6.5 million, which is – it's not quite in that weird middle category. I mean, it's an affordable price.
Yeah.
You know, he's a player that you can have as a fourth midfielder and doesn't screw up your team balance too much, I don't think. You know, Matt Phillips is just too inconsistent for me. He's been – you know, even when he was at QPR, he was kind of inconsistent. I just don't totally buy him as a fourth midfield option. I mean, I guess he's a fifth midfielder, but at 5.1, he's a little too expensive to be a fifth.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I'd say the same thing, but a little more lovingly about Rondon. Like, he's too inconsistent to bring into your squad. However, though, I always hold a candle for Rondon. I do like him as a player. I wish he would be more consistent.
You know that Richard's a West Brom fan because he's suggesting Rondon, even though he hasn't scored in 5 game weeks in a row.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, good for Richard for hanging in there during what is a lifetime of boring football.
You know, I'm a Lions fan. It's, you know, you're born into these squads sometimes. There's nothing you can do.
All right. I feel like we got sufficiently mad over midfielders there, Josh. So let's take a break, catch our breath, and we're going to come back and finish off this episode with just a few more listener questions.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
A lot of talk on this podcast about midfielders, Josh, but let's not sleep on the defense. We were talking about West Brom and Richard Orford's beloved team. If I was going to buy anything or suggest you buy a player from West Brom, still, sadly, it's a defender.
Yeah, there was a question we got from FPL Bet, which is a website I really like. I've liked the last couple of years. I've found myself on there fairly frequently. It's a very clean website. It's very easy to navigate, which is really what I like my FPL website. It's very easy.
You're all about user interface, Josh.
I am. I think it's because I'm a marketer in my career, you know, my professional, my real life, the thing that pays me. The aesthetics matter a lot to me. Anyway, FBL Bet says, who are the three best budget defenders, 4.6 million max, to own going forward based on team defensive form and fixtures? Now, impressively, you and I have named, we each came up with three. There's only one double up here.
Right. Yeah.
The first player that I picked is Niam. We may remember Niam from his time at Watford. He joined West Brom. I think, did he join them at the, I guess it must have been when the transfer window was closing. And he's at 4.3 million, and he started the last several fixtures, and I felt like he was actually reasonably involved in the Leicester match yesterday.
Yeah, he also was gave birth to a lot of great team names based on Niam Niam Niam. So I'll always love Niam for his funny name.
Here's why I think Niam is a little bit under the radar, and why he is why he's at 4.3 million. People haven't really been talking about him. So he joins the squad. He doesn't play until game week 5. He only plays 23 minutes in game week 5. They have a couple of easy fixtures that they should have probably done a little bit better and kept a clean sheet. But their last four fixtures, they played Tottenham home, Liverpool away, Man City at home, and Leicester away. Those are all four very difficult fixtures. And the Leicester fixture, they're probably a little unlucky not to have a clean sheet. I mean, they really dominated that match.
It was also a marginally offside goal by Slimani.
Marginally offside goal as well. So given all that, I don't think you have to lose any faith in the West Brom defense. And, you know, playing Burnley, Hull, Watford, and Swansea, three out of those four matches at home in four of the next 5 game weeks, I really think that I think he's a great option at 4.3.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I'm going with George Friend. The fixtures for Berger actually kind of stink, but George Friend, I feel like he's the guy. We all started with Friend in our lineup at the start of the season, and we shed him when the going narrative was Middlesbrough or was just terrible.
Right.
But they're looking at Chelsea and Leicester coming up until they hit Hull in game week 14. But if I've noticed anything about Friend is that he is fighting to the very last minute every match. And not so much that he's going to get you a yellow card, but his crosses are just spectacular. I mean, the one to Darun at the end of that City game, notwithstanding, he's got at least two or three of those crosses going every match. And I just love his assist potential no matter who the opponent is.
Yeah.
And I would never fret.
He's got a great mid-90s haircut, too.
He does. He looks like that guy from Firefly a little
bit. I wish you could combine his haircut with David, what's his name, the NYCFC striker.
David Villa?
I wish you could give George Friend the David Villa 90s goatee, too. Can you imagine that whole look? I mean, he would look like he was in like a Seattle band or something like that.
George Friend also goes in the Hall of Fame of guys who play every minute of the match with their shirt tucked in. Mad respect. Yeah. So the fact that everyone had Friend and then dumped him at the beginning of the season, I mean, he's value at 4.4. So take that for what it's worth.
Second player that I have listed here as a player you have listed as well is Eric Peters, 4.5 million Stoke defender. I wanted it to be Jeff Cameron, but he's not staying healthy enough, unfortunately.
I agree. Yeah.
But Peters has been playing in nearly every match. He was rested, I think, only once. In game week four, or game week five, that is. We started the last six fixtures, and it's a very good run coming up for Stoke. We talked about it with Joe Allen already, but it's home to Bournemouth, away to Watford, home to Burnley in the next three. So, I think that might be another good option. I don't like him as much as Nyan, but I think he's kind of second on my list.
Ben Mee at Burnley. You have to respect Burnley on their home defensive form. And he's at 4.5, one of the cheaper Burnley options. And what more can you say about Burnley? Very stout, very organized, very compact. If you look at their fixtures coming up, they face off against West Brom. They do have City in game week 13, but then it's Stoke, Bournemouth, West Ham going into the Spurs match in 17. So not a bad look for Burnley.
The last player I have is Miguel Britos on Watford, a 4.4 million defender. Watford has been a little up and down the last few game weeks, but we know they're capable of keeping a clean sheet. And if you can't afford Holobas, who I really wish I would have bought him. I mean, I know like a lot of managers are like, he's probably going to be number one because he picked up a minus two.
Yeah. Well, that was karmic punishment for all you guys who own Holobas. You know, you had that coming. You had a good, too good for too long.
It was too good for too long. So Britos is at 4.4 million. He's an interesting option. Sebastian Prottl, if he is healthy, is maybe a good option there as well. Cause I know that he's capable of, he's a big, you know, big, big center back, and he's capable of scoring the occasional headed goal. So he's a big boy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Cameron and Prottl both would have been in that list for me had either of those guys been healthy. The next question comes from Owen O'Keefe. Does defense even matter when most teams struggle to keep clean sheets? Only one clean sheet last week. And that was so ridiculous. We've talked endlessly throughout the season about the lack of clean sheets. And I felt like we were finally reverting back to the general mean. But just one clean sheet kept by Chelsea, it really ruined a lot of what could have been great scores this weekend for a lot of managers.
Yeah, I still have a lot of faith in the Arsenal defense. And I mean, I brought in Van Dijk, and that feels like a huge fail to me right now. Just a big, big error there. I should have gone Chelsea instead of Southampton.
It was wishful thinking because Van Dijk is just such a great player, and all eyes have been on him recently. And Southampton looked like they were on the ascendancy. It's just the Europa League currently, I think, is a detriment to those clean sheets for them.
I totally agree, and that's why Austin is still a good option, because he's not playing in these Europa League fixtures, or he'll come on and play 30 minutes or whatever. But Van Dijk is playing 180 basically every. He's too good not to play.
Yeah.
And he scored a goal. Against Inter in the Europa League. So if you beat Inter Milan on a Thursday, it's got to be hard to get up for playing away to Hull 3 days later.
Yeah. Now, definitely keep the faith with your defenders. Spurs, Arsenal still look like they're good for clean sheets going forward. And now we have other expensive defenders that we can invest in. Chelsea.
I have – okay, so this one is kind of a tricky one. I just brought it up because I enjoyed thinking about it. El Magico says, I have Amat, Holobas, Smith, and Walker. Should I just accept that I won't have three defenders or take a hit? All-out attack used already. Happy to hear your thoughts on taking a hit for a defender. So – I think this is one of those rare cases where a hit would be okay. The thing is, I think he has Williams too as his fifth defender, Ashley Williams. So, okay. So if Walker doesn't play, then I think you can go ahead and take a hit because you're getting 0 points from four defenders. And in that case, you've just got to try to find a clean sheet somewhere. I mean, I think there are clean sheets to be had in game week 12.
I would be more hesitant to recommend taking the hit, but I do agree. Just because Jordi Amat is out of that lineup, and this is a great opportunity if you have enough cash to turn Amat into a starting 4.5 defender, it is totally worth it here, both to solidify your bench rotation and also because you may, like you're saying, Josh, not get any points in your defense, and you have to rectify that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, Niam would be a great option there, especially at 4.3. I mean, are you West Brom, though, I mean, they're hosting Burnley. Are you scared of the Volkswagen?
Yeah, man. I'm always scared of the Volkswagen. Farfig Nugent. Macaulay, you know, doesn't stand a chance against the locomotion of, I mean, of Sam Vokes.
I mean, you held the faith of Vokes for so long, and it actually kind of came good at the end. And now has he scored in the last two game weeks?
I do. I mean, even though I no longer own Vokes, he is with my team in spirit, and I felt like I got off at the right time. I wasn't pushing my luck too much. I got two goals from him, but he just keeps on going.
I guess he's this year's Dan Mercy Mbakani, isn't he? It's the Volkswagen.
No, he's actually better than Dan Mercy Mbakani, dare I say.
Well,
you're talking about like talisman for the podcast.
Mbakani is a talisman, Brandon.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
No, but Vokes is actually talented.
That's true. All right. Deeney, Trey Deeney. We have two questions about Deeney here. Andrew Ferguson said, what has happened to Deeney? He looked like a good option a few weeks ago. Should have bought Vokes instead.
Yeah. Farfig Nugent.
In Potch We Trust says, I have one transfer out. Who do I get rid of? Callum Wilson or Deeney? Watford look atrocious going forward, but Bournemouth have tough fixtures. I think that I – of the two, I would bring in or I would drop Wilson over Deeney.
Interesting.
I just think that Deeney is a better player, and I think Watford's fixtures are a little bit better as well. And I mean, everything kind of. I agree that Watford haven't looked as good the last couple of game weeks. Although they forced some pretty good saves out of Loris Karius. I just think long term, I trust Watford's attack a little more than I trust Bournemouth's attack.
And Bournemouth do tend to spread the points out quite a bit.
It's all the defenders.
I really don't understand why everyone was so bullish on Callum Wilson the last few weeks. I mean, a lot of people were promoting bringing him into your team. And
yeah, I don't really understand it either. I mean, I guess part of it is you just want someone different.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he hadn't even scored the two game weeks before that. So, yeah, I thought it was a little strange, too.
And given the fact that we've all pretty much written Ibrahimovic off, you should have enough money to carry somebody more expensive than Callum Wilson as a third striker.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie Austin is such a great option there.
Yeah. I mean, Deeney on penalties. Watford won't be this garbage for long. And they did run into a total buzzsaw with Liverpool. I think Deeney will be okay long term.
Last question comes from Kuda Goffrey. He says, is Aguero no longer FPL essential? Current top five in the world, don't own him.
Rest in peace, Kuda Goffrey. Rest in peace, top five managers in the world.
Yeah, I do think you need Aguero long term. I mean, we're 2 weeks removed from him scoring 17 points. We're 1 week removed. You know, I mean, it just happened a week from last Sunday.
Yeah.
Or Saturday, whatever.
And just think about all those bench boost and triple captainships left to be played by, you know, the astute managers that are actually listening to Always Cheating. The top five in the world, dare I say, they I do want, well, actually, I need to do a little research here. Like, are the current top five people who have already played their triple captain chips and so on and so forth? Because that is a big question I have.
Yeah, I mean, I think given that we have these kind of chips now, I don't know that you can really trust the top five, the top 10, the top 25, really, until you get to like game week 34 or 35.
Yeah.
So the problem with Aguero is the age old problem, which is that if you bring him out and he runs into a really good patch of form, you have to find a way to bring him into your team. And he's always so damn expensive that it's really difficult to do. And you have to do major surgery, you know, you have to burn four or burn eight or something to try to bring him back into your squad. And his fixtures are pretty good coming up anyway. So I don't think that getting rid of Aguero is the way to go. There are times when I admittedly will root for an Aguero injury, just because it's always like the thought of having all of that Aguero money to spread around your team is so tempting. Mm-hmm. You know, like sometimes it just feels like you just kind of lock that money up and throw away the key. You know, it's like, oh, there's 13 million, just gone.
I feel like the Aguero narrative has been, it's incomplete because he missed three games, and you can't. It makes it that much harder to judge his form. I mean, I know he's had some trouble fitting into Pep's squad, but he still has the goals in him.
Yeah, he scored this game week, and he should have had two. I mean, you know, we're one miss away from him being on 13 points this game week.
I will say this in defense of the current top five. I mean, to win the FPL game, you have to be the one who jumps first, who sees the trend before anybody else does. So maybe we'll be wrong in 10 weeks, and Aguero is really stinky in 10 weeks' time. And these people knew it before we did. But the fact is, with Aguero, we have many, many seasons over of data that shows that Aguero will not happen to him, at least to the degree that it would matter.
Yeah, I agree. Keep Aguero, just deal with the lost money.
All right, Josh.
The unspent dollar.
Dosa zero, what do you think?
Dosa zero. All right, Brandon, that's it for this podcast. We're gonna deal with our game week. That sounds like we have to do this podcast. We enjoy doing this podcast. We're going to talk about game week 12 on next week's podcast. And remember, if you have any questions or comments, thoughts on how you would change the FPL game, what would you do differently? What would you like them to introduce next year? Let's get them all together. Maybe we'll take the top five and we'll like email the website and see if we can get a response from them or something like that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we can try to get somebody who manages the game on the podcast.
I want to hear somebody come up with the craziest chip idea. Like, what's the most, and it can't be like quadruple captain. That's too easy.
Yeah.
So if you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes. You can just search Always Cheating, Hail Cheaters, whatever you want. And on iTunes, it really helps us out if you can leave us a kind, positive review. We'd appreciate it. Find the podcast on SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, Acast, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can also follow us on Twitter. We're at Hail Cheaters. We're facebook.com/alwayscheating. You can also email us, hailcheaters@gmail.com. You can find all our content and the occasional article to boot on alwayscheating.com as well.
Josh, I was at the appalling NYCFC final playoff game last night. The only thing that made the 5-0 drubbing by Toronto palatable was the ongoing chant by the fans shouting, "We want Poku." So I leave you this episode saying, "We want Poku."
Yeah, that's very much the "Where's Wallace" string moment of the season for NYCFC. All right, Brandon, Mbakani forever.
Hail Cheaters.
Have mercy.